Welcome to the Side Hustle to Small Business podcast, powered by Hiscox. I'm your host, Sanjay Parekh. Throughout my career, I've had side hustles, some of which have turned into real businesses. But first and foremost, I'm a serial technology entrepreneur. In the creator space, we hear plenty of advice on how to hustle harder and why you can sleep when you're dead. On this show, we ask new questions in hopes of getting new answers. Questions like, how can small businesses work smarter? How do you achieve balance between work and family? How can we redefine success in our businesses so that we don't burn out after year three? Every week, I sit down with business founders at various stages of their side hustle to small business journey. These entrepreneurs are pushing the envelope while keeping their values. Keep listening for conversation, context, and camaraderie. Today's guest is Julie Maritek, a freelance copywriter based in Atlanta, Georgia. Julie has worked with big brands such as Delta Airlines, Coca-Cola, and Chick-fil-A, to name a few. On the side, she's also a photographer and stand-up comic. Julie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sanjay. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we've actually got a lot to talk about because you do a lot of things as side hustles. But before we get into that, give us a little bit about your background and what got you to where you are right now.
Yeah. So I actually started in film, but I don't think I timed it right because I was working in film in Atlanta like 20 years ago, where there was no film in Atlanta. I was like a trendsetter, but just at the wrong time. So really didn't have a lot of opportunity at the time doing film in Atlanta. I think things would have been different if I had graduated from college now. So I started working at the High Museum of Art because I love art, and I joined their marketing team. And I would say that was like my first adult job. And that led me to the advent of, you know, social media taking off. And that's really how I got my start as a social media copywriter.
That's awesome. I love that you got your start at the High Museum. I'm heavily involved with the Woodruff Arts Center. Love what they do.
Oh, yeah,
shout
it's
out
awesome.
To Woodruff Arts. Yeah, a great organization here in Metro Atlanta. Okay, so now you do copywriting, but you've got a side hustle being a stand-up comic.
That's right.
Tell
I'm all over the place.
About that.
Yeah, so I have been doing copywriting and been an associate creative director for a couple years now. I've been doing copywriting for a long time, but I've been an ACD for a few years. And honestly, the comedy was kind of random. I always wanted to take a stand-up comedy class. That was always really important to me. Just like the fear of getting up in front of people and telling jokes. And I would say about 6 or 7 years ago, I had one of those turning point years. I had a breakup, and then the job and the company I was working for went under. So lost my job, lost my girlfriend, and I was sad and lonely. And after a couple of weeks of being sad and lonely and eating Ben and Jerry's ice cream on my couch, I was like, I need to do something fun to lift my spirits up. And so that's when I decided to randomly take a stand-up comedy class. And I really just thought it would be a class. I thought I would take the class, move on with my life. But what ended up happening was I actually loved stand-up and realized I was actually like pretty good at it too. So it became definitely a passion for me and a side gig.
So was it an improv class or was it like telling jokes?
It was strictly stand-up. Yeah. So
okay.
There's obviously like kind of two fields of comedy. There's improv and stand-up. I have taken improv classes before and they're wonderful and amazing. But stand-up is really where my heart is. And stand-up is what I use to be a better storyteller and marketer.
Yeah, that's fascinating. The serendipity of it all is fabulous and great. You take this stand-up class and you're like, okay, I want to do this regularly. How do you do that?
What do you do?
You
really start figuring out who's running shows and you start, it's much like a business. You start networking, right? You start, I was the new kid in town at the time, so nobody knew who I was or anything about me. And the Atlanta stand-up scene is actually pretty big. It's a really great scene here in Atlanta. So really you start networking, right? And you start just going to people's shows and just showing up and A lot of them are late at night. And, you know, that is one challenge of stand-up, is it's usually at night and it's usually in like a seedy, sticky bar at, you know, midnight. So I wouldn't say it's like the most glam thing you can do. But you start networking and then you just get up there and try to start telling jokes. And then eventually the goal is that you start actually getting booked on shows. So there's open mics where anybody can show up. Sanjay, right. You could show up. You could tell a few jokes. Those are called open mics. And then there's actual booked shows where you're booked on a show.
Okay. So open mics, I take it. You're not getting paid for that.
Correct. You're not getting paid. It's more where you go. You practice out jokes, you know, things like that. Hang out with your peers, get a beer. And then shows are where, you know, you're actually booked. You get paid. You know, you're one of 6 or 8 comics on the show. Right. So that's kind of how that works.
Yeah. Okay. So you've done shows then before, I take it, because you've been doing this for a number
of
years.
I've done shows. I've actually run my own shows too. I produced several shows in Atlanta as well, where I was the producer and also the host of the show. And I booked the comics on the show. So I've been at it from pretty much every angle.
Yeah. So do you like that part of it more?
I love it. I love running my own shows, honestly. I love running my own shows more than I love being on other people's shows. And it's always such an honor to be asked to be on anybody's show. Like, it's just like always such a happy feeling. But running your own show is a great way to learn a little bit of entrepreneurship and to basically run a show. You know, I'm booking the comics, I'm hosting the show, I'm telling them how long their time is on stage. I'm paying them, you know, so there's a lot, I'm finding the venue. So there's a lot behind the scenes.
Okay. So I know nothing about kind of this world. So I'm super curious. So how does the money flow work? You're doing a show like this. Patrons are paying something to show up for the show. And then that's the money you're using to pay all of the performers. Is there anything left over for you at the end of the night? Like, how does this all work?
Bare minimum. So if anybody would like to go to my GoFundMe, I will send them the link. but no, it's basically, it happens a lot of different ways. So let's say I was like, you know what? I want to run a show at this venue. I would email the venue and I would pitch, you know, the show, and I would pitch why it would be beneficial for that space, whether it's a gallery or a brewery or a restaurant or a theater, why it would be beneficial for them to do a comedy show. And usually you kind of work it out on the back end. So you can either, the venue can pay you to run the show, and then you can use that money. So let's say the venue pays you $200 a show, then you could use that money to divvy out to the comics. Or you do ticket sales. So then, you know, a percentage of all the sales, you know, maybe 60% goes to the venue, 40% goes to you and the comics. And usually the host, it's kind of tradition, the host kind of takes like the last remaining amount. It's more important to pay the comics, really.
Right.
And so that's how that all works. So it can happen a lot of different ways, whether it's a set fee or whether it's ticket sales. And then obviously you have that tip jar up there, hoping people will throw in an extra, you know, $5, $10, $20. And then at the end of the show, you divvy that up with the comics as well.
Yeah. So the numbers you're sharing make it sound like it's not that lucrative.
No,
of an opportunity.
I don't recommend anybody do this. No, it's amazing, and it can lead to lots of money. And I have friends that do it, you know, full time and have quit their full time jobs. But you really have to hustle. I mean, that's the thing about stand up comedy is, you need to be out every night. You need to be showing your face. You need to be grinding. And it's a hard life. And, you know, I wouldn't say that it is like when you're just starting out or you're doing it more casually, that it is a revenue generator in the sense that, you know, you could just right away quit your job, but you could work up to that point.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're doing this. And you're starting out the first time you're producing a show, something made you nervous, I'm sure. What was it? How did you overcome it? How did you deal with whatever issues happened?
Well, it's, you know, it's hard to host a show because you are up there in front of everybody, and you're kind of, you know, you're the energy generator at the start of the show. So you really like have to get the party started up there. And it's really nerve-wracking to host a show. You know, what if your comics don't show up? What if one of them, you know, goes way over their time? What if, you know, they're like, you know, not hitting it, you know, with the jokes and the audience, you start getting nervous, the audience isn't having a good time. There's a lot of, you know, anything that's live is going to create, you know, a different sense of anxiety than anything that is planned or where you can edit after or put a filter on. But that's kind of the beauty and the anxiety of stand-up comedy is it's all live. You know, there's no going back.
Yeah. That point that you made there of comics not showing up, that would be my fear right there.
Yeah.
Is that somebody doesn't show up.
Yeah. There's plenty of times that you text your friend and you're like, oh my God, so-and-so didn't show up. I need you here in 15 minutes, you know, or you could give the other comics more time to kind of take away from that time. And most of the time comics are, you know, pretty reliable, but you know, every once in a while or someone the last minute will be like, I'm hungover, or I booked another show that pays me better. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of things that can happen.
Yeah. Do you blacklist those people that bail because of another show just paying better?
Yeah.
Even they committed?
I'm going to read their names on this podcast and I want everybody to troll them.
I mean, I would find that pretty insulting personally. Like just cause you, I mean, I get it that more money, but come on, you committed.
Yeah. You definitely don't forget, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
You know, you don't like, I mean, I'm very like, if I commit to something, I generally do it. And I would say most comics are like that. But you know, occasionally you get that one or two comics that's, you know, like, oh, I booked this for more money. So peace. And then you,
so they become never on the list to
right. You're
ask
like,
first
they kind of become like the backup comic.
Right. So, okay. I'm sure everybody that's listening to this is thinking this too. And I got to ask, so how do you come up with your jokes? Like how do you work through them? How do you figure them out?
Yeah, well, I have a note, you know, in my notes app, since I started a comedy, so you can imagine, you know, it's 6 years later, that notes app is a CVS receipt's worth of jokes. I mean, it just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. I have so when I think of something that is, could be funny, just a thought, or I say something to my wife and I'm like, oh my God, that could be a really funny bit. I'll just put it down in the notes app just to keep it. Cause you always forget, you know, like I don't care. You always think you're going to remember, but you don't, you forget. So that's my first advice to people with any idea, you know, whatever it is, whether it's telling a funny joke or that could be a cool book idea, or that could be a great headline. And just write it down, just put it in your notes app. And then I will revisit it when I'm getting ready for a show and kind of start thinking like, you know, which one of these have some legs. Sometimes you go back and read your ideas and you're like, what was that? I have no idea what any of that meant. Or you're like, that was embarrassingly awful. And then, you know, occasionally I'd see like one out of every 10 or 15 things. You're like, okay, I could totally like, I could try to work with that. And then I just start writing, you know, sometimes I do it by hand. Sometimes I do it in a Google Doc. Sometimes I do it right in my notes app. Just kind of depends on my vibe. And just start writing out jokes. And then, you know, I go to shows and practice, you know, practice the joke. And you always kind of, when you do a show that's booked, you know, where you're getting paid, you kind of buffer the jokes that you know work or that you hope work or have worked more than not, you kind of sandwich those in with the new jokes, you know? So you
Got
kind of
it.
Do like a joke that generally does well. And then you dip your feet into the new joke, try it out. And then you go to one that like works, you know? So there's kind of like a method.
Right. So you don't try jokes beforehand on somebody else before you go to shows?
My wife will notice when I'm like trying out a joke. Like she'll totally eyeball. She'll like, like I'm checking out at Publix and I'm like, hey, you know, hear my joke. And she's like, oh my God, stop. So she can tell when I'm trying out jokes. So yes, I do quietly try them out on people or just like, you know, say them out loud to the checkout lady at Publix and see what reaction I get. But for the most part, outside of that, I pretty much wait until the show, or like I mentioned, open mics are a great place to try out jokes as well, because most of the people in the audience there are other comics.
Oh, okay. Okay. So probably a pretty receptive crowd.
Yeah. I mean, it can happen anywhere, at a bar, a restaurant. Sometimes there's just people eating and drinking beer or whatever. But most of the time at open mics, the people that are really paying attention to you, at least, are the other comics. It's not really the people there.
Yeah. Do they give you feedback then afterwards about
people give you feedback if you ask for it. And, you know, if my friends are there, I always ask them, like, what do you think of that? Like, should I reword that differently? And I have some close comedy friends that I will check in with them, you know, before I do the joke to get some ideas. So that's really how it works.
Support for this podcast comes from Hiscox, committed to helping small businesses protect their dreams since 1901. Quotes and information on customized insurance for specific risks are available at Hiscox.com. Hiscox, the business insurance experts.
Okay, so you've got this side hustle. Mm-hmm. You've got other side hustles too. But you've got to actually work for a living as well. So how do you balance those things? Because you just said, like, this comedy thing is usually late at night, and that's not when you're working. You're working during the day. And so
it is.
Doesn't conflict, but sleep is in between. So, how are you balancing?
It's a lot. I mean, you know, I work during the day, and then at night I go out and I do shows. I'm kind of at a place right now, because I have so many side hustles, that I probably don't go out as much as I used to. I used to be out six nights a week. I would be out. I would be out grinding. I would be out late at night. I would be at, like, every show. But I'd say nowadays I am more interested in the pursuit of comedy from a business standpoint and how it can help businesses. And I still go out, like, you know, and booked on shows, and I still go out and do those shows and network. So I would say I'm kind of like, I'm not a newbie where I feel like I have to be out all the time. But I've also explored, you know, the idea of, like, does a side hustle have to be a grind, you know, where you are exhausted, or is a side hustle something that you just enjoy doing and sharing with other people, and you're kind of figuring out where it goes?
Yeah, so that's interesting. And maybe it's, you have a perspective on your side hustle not becoming your full hustle, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's the case there. Is that why you think of it that way?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's conflicting for any artist. I think any artist that you talk to is going to be a bit conflicted about their goal with this said passion, right? Because there are people that they want it to become their full-time gig. Like, that is what they dream of. They want to be on Jimmy Fallon. Of course, if Jimmy Fallon's reps came to one of my shows and tapped me to come on Jimmy Fallon, I would be there in a heartbeat. But it has been an interesting question, you know, over the last couple of years. If I've been doing comedy now for 6 years, and I'm in my, you know, I'm in my early 40s now, and my wife and I are thinking of starting a family, and, you know, I have, like, full-time job, you know, what is the point of stand-up? Is it to do it full-time, or is it to do it because I love it and I enjoy it? And so I think that's kind of an interesting question for a side gig. You know, I think a side gig and a side hustle can become your full-time gig. And if that's what you want it to be, it can totally become that. But I think sometimes there's a lot of pressure, especially for artists, you know, people who act on the side, people that tell jokes, you know, people that paint, you know, like, oh, are you going to do this full time? And sometimes you just don't even know the answer yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really actually interesting perspective, and something to think about for all of our listeners that have side hustles. Because that is, for a lot of the folks that we have on this podcast, they move from a side hustle into a small business, right? They're making it that path instead of just keeping it something you do on the side.
And yeah. I think for me, what I'm intrigued by with stand-up is, you know, there's stand-up itself. I love producing, running my own shows. But what I'm interested right now is combining my passion for stand-up comedy with my passion for storytelling and marketing and entrepreneurship. So really what I'm exploring right now is, you know, how I can use the tenets of stand-up and use that. So I've been I taught at General Assembly. I taught a course there about using what I've learned from stand-up comedy and implementing that into marketing. And nice. One of my goals this year is actually to write a book for entrepreneurs and, you know, how to use what I've learned from stand-up into that, because there's a lot of overlap. And that's kind of what I'm intrigued about, is combining both my passions and making that my side gig, you know, into podcasts and public speaking, writing a book and things of that nature. So I guess, you know, sometimes your side gig can grow into something else.
Yeah. I got to say that comedy in terms of marketing, if it's done well, really knocks it out of the park. I the thing that I thought of immediately when you said that was the old Delta video, the in-flight safety video. Mm-hmm. They had the finger wagging, the whole thing, which was really, really well done. It was very funny. And I think people really paid attention to it because of that. It was,
yeah, like, that
normally
was
you
first,
don't pay attention to that.
No,
right?
And that was the first like in-flight video that implemented humor. And
right.
It's still the most popular one. And that led to, you know, now when you fly Delta, and Delta's been one of my clients, you know, you watch the in-flight video and they're still trying to make them funny and relevant and approachable because they realize like, oh, people will actually watch these if it's funny.
Yeah. Another one that does a great job, which is a Delta partner, is Virgin Atlantic. They have great videos as well. I end up watching them. I mean, I know all the content, but I still end up watching it because it's just so really well done.
You know, you're such a fanboy of in-flight videos.
Well, I will tell you, of that original Delta one, there was one of the flight attendants, this guy that was on there. I actually had him as one of my flight attendants of one of the flights I took on Delta. And as I was coming on the plane, I was like, hey, you're from the video.
Yeah.
And I think he appreciated being recognized for that. So I got some nice treatment on that flight, even though I wasn't up in first class. He treated me pretty well just because I recognized him, but he was a super nice guy. And, you know, it was neat having kind of a mini celebrity.
One of my flight attendants. And he probably felt so happy that you even recognized him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you've been doing comedy now for a while. You've also been a copywriter for quite some time. If you could kind of look back at what you've done and think about the things that you've done and you know, go back in time, is there something that you would have done differently?
That's a great question. If I could go back in time and do things differently, I probably would have taken more risks when I was younger in terms of pushing the boundaries of copywriting. You know, you always look back and you think like you're especially in marketing, like your journey can be so wayward. You know, it's not unlikely to meet somebody in marketing who, like I said, I started in film and then got into social media and then got into copywriting, and that's led me to be an ACD. And I think that I probably would have taken more risks as a copywriter and, you know, tried to convince clients to push the boundaries a little more of their tone of voice and how they're speaking about themselves, instead of always playing it so safe, which is also something that I think is similar to stand-up comedy. You know, you could get up there and tell the same joke over and over and over and over and over again. But, you know, where are the risks and the vulnerability of being up there in front of people and telling a brand new joke and not knowing if people are going to laugh? You know, it's frightening, but it's also exciting.
Right. Well, why do you think that is, that you didn't take those risks? Is it because you felt like you were just too new? You just weren't comfortable in the role? Like, what was it that made you want to go safe instead of daring?
You know, I mean, this could get into a whole conversation of identity, but part of it, I think, was being an LGBT woman. I think, you know, I am in a very, even though there's a lot of women in marketing and a lot of women in agencies, the C-suite is still very male focused, and most of the clients are run by male CEOs, and most of the copy that I have to get approved or had to get approved is by men. And back when I started, you know, as a copywriter, you know, I wasn't out at all. I was, you know, I remember my first job at The High, that was from 2008 to 2012. you know, I slowly told my coworkers there after years that I was gay, you know, because it wasn't, the times were different, you know, it was right. not as, you know, accepting as it is now. Diversity was not any part of any conversation of any job I had, where it is now, of, you know, representing LGBT folks, women, people of color. So it was a different time, even though it really wasn't that long ago. It feels like a long time ago. And so I think there was a part of me that probably held back my voice a little bit because I wasn't fully being myself. And I think, you know, and I was told by people like, well, I don't know if I would come out at work, you know, like, what if they pigeonhole you? Or what if,
really,
what if you change your mind, you're not really gay? And, you know, then everyone thinks, you know, just all these, you know, all those sort of scary, frightening thoughts of like being yourself. And there's no way that that did not hinder myself as a creative at the time.
Well, it's great that now at least that's not the case. Then
Exactly. I mean, now I'm fully open. I'm married. I have a wife. And now diversity is becoming part of the conversation. You know, it's part of the water cooler conversation now, as it should be. And it's a shame that it's taken so long. So, you know, advice for younger folks, younger women, people of color, LGBTQ folks. Yeah, I mean, being authentically yourself will affect your work. And looking back, you know, I don't blame myself, but I definitely see how I've evolved as an artist just by being myself. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it gives you a great foundation to be even better now.
Yes.
Than you could have been back then. So,
and comedy ironically helped that. Comedy, you know, I would get up there on stage and talk about my queer stories to strangers. And that helped me become more comfortable with that part of myself. So, you know, it's all kind of interrelated when you think about it.
Okay. Two questions remaining for you. First, what would you tell somebody who's thinking about starting a side hustle like you, or trying to take that leap and making that side hustle even more, kind of like how you did with producing shows and, and doing that? What advice would you give them?
Be independently wealthy. No, I would say... Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding. I would say, no,
I like how you picked the two extremes right there.
Know,
be independently wealthy and don't
just
do it
don't,
at all.
Or just literally do anything else. No, I kid. I fully say do it. Like 100%, just plant the tiniest seed. I think when you think about starting a side gig, I think there, like I, like we go back to what we were talking about, I think there is that pressure to be like, well, is this going to be successful? And am I going to make money at this? And am I going to be able to do this full time? And I'm going to be able to support my family? And are people going to think I'm stupid? And, you know, you have all those internal dialogues, which hinders most people from doing a side gig. And I say, just jump in the deep end, do it, you know, plant the seeds. You absolutely will never regret it, you know, taking chances in life. Nobody on their deathbed thinks, you know, I wish I had taken less chances in life.
Julie, this has been fantastic. I'm sure we can keep telling jokes for like another hour, but where can our listeners find and connect with you online?
Yes. Well, they can find me on Instagram, at Julie Maritek, and Facebook, which is also my name, Julie Maritek. LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not quite active on TikTok yet. I know that's where all the kids are. I do want to amp up my comedy representation on the TikTok. So that's kind of my next foray. But yeah, people can find me there, and they can find me on my website, which is www.juliemaratek.com. And on the website, I talk about my clients, my work, and there's also a page on there about my comedy.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on today.
Thanks so much. I had a great time, and I am very happy to be here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Side Hustle to Small Business podcast, powered by Hiscox. To learn more about how Hiscox can help protect your small business through intelligent insurance solutions, visit hiscox.com. That's H-I-S-C-O-X.com. hiscox.com. And if you have a story you want to hear on this podcast, please visit hiscox.com/share-your-story. I'm your host, Sanjay Parikh. You can find out more about me at my website, sanjayparikh.com.